for our website, there.
And, I'd like to commend Debbie for being concerned about being a good parent and being at the board. I think that's also nice. I must confess, it is true that Debbie's been asking me to give such a talk for years, and I have always felt unqualified to give such a talk. I still feel unqualified to give such a talk. I feel even more unqualified because some of the people present. I want to specifically not only thank Judy for introducing me, but for those who don't know, Judy Rosenthal gives a wonderful series on communication with children. My wife and I have benefited from her wisdom very, very much, and her next series is beginning right after Pesach. But I would strongly encourage people to participate, attend. There's a lot to gain from it. And I'm standing in the presence of our wonderful director of the nursery school, who has benefited so many of our children in so many ways, and staff member of the nursery school who we've all benefited from. So I feel extremely inadequate. I think I have some Torah ideas. Honestly, what made me more comfortable presenting this year is I think I've had enough experience to know what some of the challenges might be. I don't know if I'm coming with any brilliant solutions, but I hope if we share some of the challenges, some of the goals, I think I've been in around enough to know some of the goals. If we share some of the goals, maybe get a little bit of chizuk from each other hearing that other people are dealing with such things, maybe an idea here or there. I'm reminded there's a certain individual in this community. I used to teach high school. I taught high school in the yeshiva for a number of years. A certain individual in the community who had a child in high school and would ask my advice a lot on parenting. And I would give him different thoughts, etc. And this was before we had any children. And we had our Shalom Zachar for our oldest, Yosef. And he came up to me at the Shalom Zachar and wished me Mazel Tov and said, "Let's see how your advice works for yourself." So, and you know what? Not such smashing success. I'll just give one more picture of what I consider my credentials and lack thereof for this evening. I have the great honor to make numerous presentations and numerous topics. I think I'd be hard-pressed to think of one that I was more stressed out about beforehand. What in the world am I going to say? What should I say? What shouldn't I say? Do I have anything worthwhile to say? And I was so stressed out this morning that I screamed at one of my kids. So hey, that should make me appropriate to make this presentation, right? At least I understand some of the challenges. Okay. There is and thank you all for coming. There is a famous sefer from Shlomo Volba, a very brief sefer, extremely powerful, called Zriya Ubinyan Bechinuch, planting and building when it comes to Torah education. And it's a tremendously worthwhile sefer to study, but his basic concept in the introduction of the sefer is very powerful, and I think it's an extremely important point to reflect on. Rav Volba asks a question. We daven in Shmona Esrei that we ask Hashem to be matzmiach keren Yeshua, to make the salvation blossom and sprout forth. We also daven in Shmona Esrei that God should be bonei Yerushalayim. He should build Jerusalem. So what's the difference between building something and having it sprout forth? Are they synonyms? Are they different? And he explains they're two very different approaches. And again, I can't do it justice, but in a very brief mode, he says that bonei is when God comes and he just gives us Yerushalayim. Boom, snaps his fingers, creates a built Yerushalayim. There you go. Matzmiach keren Yeshua is you imagine planting something and allowing it to sprout. Creates a context in which something can develop. And he lets it grow for itself and develop for itself. And Rav Volba explains that chinuch, Torah education, really involves both of these things very much. And this is, I think, an extremely important thing to reflect on. I think we're pretty good at being bonim, at being builders. We set very clear structures for our children. We set curriculum goals for our children. We set schedules for our children. We set diets for our children. We set rules for our children. All of these things are, and this is our job. All these things are setting very clear modes of structure. The question is, how much of what we do is allowing growth on behalf of the child? And it's a really important thing to think about. Again, basic, but just important to reflect on every now and then. There's no way I can dictate what my child is going to be. I can't. I mean, think about it for a moment. Just reflect to yourself for a moment. You hope your child is blank 20, 30 years from now. I'm not talking about what profession they have. Everyone knows you're supposed to hope your child is a doctor. Everybody knows that. But I'm not talking about the profession. I'm talking about the character, the level of religiosity, the level of integrity, honesty, all these different things. So think of whatever comes to mind immediately for you and ask yourself, what can I do today to ensure what it will be 20, 30 years from now? Oh, it's very hard to imagine what I could do to ensure something. I can be the best role model. I can, and we'll talk about that a little bit later, God willing. I can encourage my child in certain directions. Can I force my child? You're going to be a nice person. It's hard to believe that it's going to work. Just to give one example, just to reflect on a little bit, and this is a complicated example, and there's a whole aspect of this example about being concerned about other people, and that's a separate discussion. Imagine if we lived in a vacuum, and I want to teach my child how to daven appropriately. I want to teach my child how to daven appropriately, and I want to teach my child how to daven appropriately in shul. Now just ask yourself a question. What's my goal? My goals, presumably, my goal for my child as a davener is that davening and davening in shul should be an illuminating, worthwhile experience for my child. Presumably. Gesundheit. Presumably, I want to teach my child appropriate decorum in shul. Okay, so here I am. I'm sitting here with and for some people, it is a wonderful experience to bring their children to shul. For some children, it's a wonderful experience. I'm not saying not to. Just think about it. So I'm sitting there with my 5-year-old in shul. Okay? My goal, and why am I? Because I want my child to find shul a worthwhile experience. Okay. My child doesn't have anything to daven, let's say, and he's just sitting there. And heaven help him if he makes noise, because I'm going to stop him if he makes noise. Okay, so just take a step back for a second. How exactly did I teach my child about prayer? What did I teach my child? So all I'm saying is that in many, many aspects of our children's upbringing, we have to have the long game in mind. We have to have the long game in mind. So... And just to take this one step further, I reiterate, every family is different, every child is different, but just to run with this theoretical example, you realize there are children who could have a negative outlook on tefillah because they're brought to shul. Just think about that. This is the time they're sitting there, and every time they make a peep, their parent shushes them. That's not fun. What am I hate shul. So one has to be really thought out, and I don't think there's one clear answer. But if my goal is that my child should find prayer meaningful and worthwhile, I have to figure out, how can I teach my child about prayer? How can I teach my child about prayer in shul? How can I make shul a worthwhile experience for my child? To be very honest with you, again, we're all different. I don't even begin to think about bringing my children to shul until they're old enough to read from a sitter themselves. I'm not talking about coming in for 5 minutes. Many of you have seen many of the follies of the Rosenbaum family from the Bima, but we're not talking about that. That's 5 minutes here and 5 minutes there. But really encouraging a child to come to shul, if there's nothing for them to do, I don't know why I'm... Again, and that's for me. That's for myself and my wife and our family. It's different. Everyone's different. Once my child is old enough, I love encouraging them to come to shul when they have like a Ruach Binyan or something like that. I think he'll find that very meaningful. But, at least for myself, I don't force him. I don't force him because if I force him, I have to ask myself in the long run, is that going to be worthwhile? Now, on the other hand, if I never force my child to do anything, I'm not being a parent. So each of us have to think about things. But the definition, and we get, I think, very caught up in this. What is my goal as a parent? So intellectually, we would all say our goal as a parent is to foster great growth in our children. I think that's what we would say. It's a very scary trap sometimes, because many times that's our like big broad picture. For many of us, our goal as a parent in the moment is for people to think I'm a good parent. And maybe the next level is for people not to talk about me. So just imagine, and we all have this experience, we all have this experience. I'm walking with my child down the aisle in Shalom's. Just and my child throws a fit in the middle of the aisle of Shalom's. They didn't even get the cookie yet, you know what I mean? It's really bad. So now listen, maybe for this moment for my child, a firm response is what my child needs. Maybe so. But we all have this struggle because my greatest goal as a parent in that moment, at least in part of my brain, is I want to be the parent that no one's staring at in Shalom's, right? So I have this natural reaction to just like stop my child and whatever it is. And it really doesn't matter what means I use as long as he or she quiets down very quickly. And in the long run, that's not parenting. We know that. Sometimes it might be, but not as a general rule. So we have to, and I think we have to keep on reminding ourselves of trying to encourage ourselves of fostering growth, Zriya, and not just Binyan. And I think that's a very important idea to think about. Rabbi Merkin from the Yeshiva actually frequently says the following idea, chinuch, this is the term we throw around for education. You know, chinuch really means beginning. Chanukas hamizbeach was the dedication of the altar. That's why we call Hanukkah, because the Beis HaMikdash had been rededicated. So it's amazing to think about the chinuch experience as setting my child on a path, as opposed to programming my child. It's a very different perspective. There is a story or a perspective attributed to Rabbi Yaakov Kamenetsky, Zichrono Livracha, that someone asked him, what should they worry about with their children? What aspects, I mean, we could worry about a million things with our children. What aspects should we worry about? What should we really be particular about? Again, this requires a lot of context, of course, but as a general rule of thumb, he said, the things that you can imagine your child doing when he or she is walking down to the chuppah, those are the things you should really worry about. So just imagine your child is just got on the table. You're having guests for Shabbos lunch and your child just wandered onto the table. Okay, so I'm not saying you shouldn't get your child off the table, but that's one example. And another example is they call from school and say your child is regularly lying about things. So just think about those two examples. So again, if I'm focused on my embarrassment, the total crisis is when my child is crawling on the table. But the odds are that when my child is ready to get married, God willing, he or she will not be crawling on the table. And if that's so, there are other problems. Honesty, there are people who are adults who have a real issue with honesty. Again, obviously, that requires real wisdom. You're going to pull your child home and start screaming at them about honesty. It's probably not going to be effective either. But that requires a real strategy. So it's just interesting. Again, so many times we get so frozen in what are they saying when they're looking at us, and we allow ourselves to be brought out of the long game that we really have to be playing, if that makes sense. I think that's one thing I would just like to reflect on. Just to give you a sense, I have like three general reflection points. And then I'll be very happy to open it up to any comments or questions, and then I have some more practical things I would like to share. Okay, but that's point number one. Point number two, it's very apropos of the season, maybe not so apropos for this age, but Bez Hashem, we should all have a lot of hatzlach in the education of our children. It'll be very apropos in a few years. People ask me all the time when they're getting ready for the Seder, you know, there's a mitzvah in the Torah, v'igadat levincha bayomohu lemur. Tell your child at the Seder about Yetzias Mitzrayim, okay? Imagine a fifth grader coming home from Pesach, for Pesach break from school, okay? This child knows more about Avodim Hayinu, Manishtana, and the four cups than you ever will, I assure you. They're armed with these three notebooks and you're amazed that it all fit in the backpack. And so now it comes to the Seder, and it's my job to teach my child about Yetzias Mitzrayim. It's my job to teach my child about Yetzias Mitzrayim. My child is about to give me a major lecture about Yetzias Mitzrayim. Where do I fit in? This is a question commonly asked by parents. And I really believe, and I think this is very, very important. I say this as someone who's taught in the classroom, and maybe more importantly, I say it as someone who's an adult in the same community in which he was a child. And I see a lot of my contemporaries as adults today. teachers can impart knowledge wonderfully. And it's so important to have good teachers and good schools. And we owe our teachers and schools tremendous gratitude. The interest in what the teachers have to say, in more often than not, is really defined by the attitude the children see at home. In other words, you will have a child with a propensity towards a certain subject. This child loves algebra. Okay, so it doesn't really matter if the parents like algebra or not. The child likes algebra. The child is a good teacher. They're set in algebra. But assume a more neutral situation where, you know, the child just wants to get a good grade in whatever the class is. I've seen it so many times. The difference between, and just to emphasize, of course, everything we talk about with education, our children have free will. It doesn't mean if a child is not vibrant in their religion, that doesn't mean the parents messed up. But a goal to try to maximize a children's opportunity is the more excited the parents are about any subject, certainly religion, the more the child learns that it's something important. It's not just important to the teacher whose job it is to teach the subject, who clearly is interested in the subject because that's why they're teaching this subject and not music. That's nothing against music. If a child is in a home that values the message, that values the topic, the child is more inclined to value that. So I tell people all the time, you know what your mitzvah v'igadat levincha is at the Seder? Your mitzvah v'igadat levincha is to convey an excitement for Yetzias Mitzrayim. That my child should sit, and by the way, just for whatever it's worth, I actually do know a lot about Avodah Bayinu and Manishtana and the Four Cups and all that stuff, and I'm not interested in telling my kids about it at the Seder. I really don't. I sit and I try to figure out for the Seder, what can I do to make it exciting for them? And by the way, I don't mean exciting for them to make it big, exciting toys. There are people who are very into that and kol hakavod. That's not what I mean by exciting. I mean that they should see it as something valuable for them. And obviously, I have to be creative about it. That's part of my job as a parent. But even more valuable than if pedagogically I came up with a good technique a given year or a bad technique a given year is the fact that it's so obvious to my kids that this is a big deal to me. If it's a big deal to me, my children see themselves as much more similar to me than any of their teachers. On some level, certainly at this age at least, my children are more interested in emulating me than any of their teachers. And they would never admit such a thing. Some of them wouldn't, some of them would. But if I convey excitement, I've done a great thing for my child. And I think there's a very famous idea, I'm sure many of you have heard of this before. The second paragraph of the Shema emphasizes the idea of teaching our children. So just listen to this pasuk. You should teach these words to your children, these words of Torah to your children to speak about them. When you sit in your house, you in the singular, when you in the singular walk on the path, when you in the singular lie down, when you in the singular get up. So I should teach my children about these things when I'm sitting in my house, when I'm walking, when I'm getting up in the morning, when I'm going to bed at night. Shouldn't it say I should teach these words to my children to speak about them when they're sitting in the house, when they're walking on the path, so on and so forth? Are you with me? So many, many commentators say about this that the message is, you know what the real way I teach my children is? The real way I teach my children is what I'm doing. When I'm, you know, I can teach my children from today until, I could tell my children, excuse me, from today until tomorrow that Torah learning is important. I can preach it day and night. If when they're sitting at my Shabbos table, if they see that someone has a Torah idea and it perks my interest, or I bring something up, or if they bring it up, I'm interested, I really taught them Torah is important. If I preach to them all day about Torah is important, and someone says a Torah idea at the table, and it goes in one ear out the other, and then someone starts talking politics, and I'm glued to the topic, so I taught them Torah is not so important. That's what I taught them. And this is, it's extremely frightening. It really is frightening. I say to my wife sometimes, my wife is also a teacher. I'm not a teacher anymore. My wife is a teacher. I say to my wife sometimes, wow, it's an amazing thing to think about. The only question is, in what messed up way are we that will manifest itself in our children's upbringing? It's fascinating, you know. But it's a little bit intimidating. But it also is tremendously empowering. That in the end of the day, if there are things that we are actually good at in our home, without darshaning, without preaching, our kids can see what we do. Our kids know what we're like at home much better than we do. It's kind of frightening also. But on the other hand, what that means is if I just work on trying to be as good a person as I can, that in its own way rubs off on the kids. Of course, I have to know what I'm doing with raising my children in so many ways, but it's a tremendous charge just to think about some things. How do we treat each other? Our children are seeing that constantly. How do we treat them? How do we treat other adults in the house? How do we treat guests? Our children see that constantly. How do we speak? Okay, if one question is how we treat each other. How do we speak? What kind of words do we use? I'm sure, ma'asim shebechol yom, happens left and right. Someone, a young parent in the community once told me that his child was using a certain word that he thought was highly inappropriate, and he turns to the child and said, "Where did you ever learn that word?" And the child said, "You said it last week." I said, "Oh, that's true." But that kind of thing actually happens all the time. And finally, in whatever we do, the kids can see what's important to us. Just imagine if, and again, I'm not saying we should act for the children. By the way, if we act for the children, they know that we're acting. They can figure that one out too. That's not good either. But imagine if in our home, we're very big on doing chesed. That's so much more valuable as a chinuch for the children than all the speeches in the world. And by the way, the fact that they see in our home we're particular about doing chesed means volumes more than if they see their teachers in school are particular about doing chesed. It's different. What they see from their parents is just different. Along these lines, I personally feel that if we can create a mode of happiness in the home, that is so valuable. Specifically, I'm not talking about keeping the rules of halacha. That all is wonderful. I'm talking about being people of happiness. I know it sounds very basic, but just think about it. I was at a funeral recently. You learn a lot about people from funerals. It's a little depressing, but you learn a lot from funerals. So it was a funeral recently of a person who to me was a very quiet man, but he was clearly a family-oriented person. And his son gets up to speak. His son must be in his 40s. I think it was in his 40s. I think so. Son gets up to speak, and he has this recollection of a Shabbos table scene that it was just father, mother, three children. Sounded like they were like teenage years, maybe younger. And the father started laughing. Just, I don't know, someone sits at the table, and the father thought it was cute. The father started laughing. And his wife started laughing. And the children started laughing. And there it was, just the family, just the five of them. Just in uproarious laughter around the table because the father started laughing. It's an interesting picture, but to me what was most striking is this was this strong recollection for the child. It's an amazing thing, you know, so it's such a basic thing. You come in the door at night or when you've picked up the kids from carpool, whatever. What's that hello? Is it a grunt, or is it a positive thing? Is it so nice to see you? I'm so excited. It sounds so basic, but I think it's actually a very powerful thing. And just to connect to what we were talking about before, our children's connection to religion is very much connected to what they perceive as our connection to religion. Far from 100% in that, but many times that's the case. So if everything about religion seems to be us grunting that we have to do this, that, and the other, that's a far from ideal picture to convey to our children. If listen, I am not going to be the one to say, and that's why before we clean the refrigerator for Pesach, we should say we're so fortunate to be Jews. I'm not that from. I'm not asking you to be that from. But I don't know. Should there be a feeling of excitement that Shabbos is coming? Should there be a feeling of excitement that the Seder is coming? Even if there's a lot of work leading up to it, we can create those feelings. And that's a very powerful thing. Our children want to connect to us. They really do. They want to have positive things to connect us with. Again, I'm not talking about acting. I'm talking about trying to look at ourselves and ask ourselves if we're generating the positivity that hopefully we should. I just think and I think if we do, I think it's a very powerful thing. Just to share an anecdote, I recently gave a class about ASHRAE. And there was a woman who came to the class. She's a grandmother in our community. And I'll just tell you it because, just to give you a sense. So as I'm sure many of you know, there's no Nun in ASHRAE. ASHRAE is in alphabetical order. The line for Nun is missing. And this is an obvious question. Why is that so? And so I shared with them the idea that Nun, it's a Gemara, the idea that Nun represents falling, and we don't talk about that in ASHRAE. So this grandmother thought that was such a neat idea that she sat down and she shared it with her fifth grade granddaughter. You know what I learned? You daven ASHRAE. I daven ASHRAE. You know what I learned about ASHRAE? You know, hey, the Nun isn't there. You know why the Nun isn't there? Now, here's the, oh, that's so unfortunate moment. The fifth grade granddaughter, who goes to one of our community's fine schools, turned to the grandmother and said, "You didn't know that?" You know? So it's interesting. So the grandmother shares this with me as like their like sort of embarrassing moment. And I think that it was a tremendous moment. Because the bottom line is totally unscripted, by the way. The greatest proof it was unscripted is if you were going to script it, you would have thought of something that the kid didn't know. Mm-hmm. The grandmother conveyed an excitement about it to the grandchild. And she saw that. She saw it in the most palpable of ways. And again, that's worth, whether or not she said that it resonated with her, that resonates with her so much more than anything she learned in school that day. Anything. I really think so. At the risk of sounding a little corny, I shared this in another context recently. When we were on vacation recently, you know, our family went on vacation in January. So I got davening duty with one of my kids regularly over vacation. I normally don't. My wife normally takes care of that. Normally, he davens in school. When it's not school, my wife normally covers it. So I had davening duty. And it happens to be that this son of mine, there were numerous things that he davened regularly in school. And I think it was very nice. The Rebbe taught them the tefillos to different tunes. And but these were like things from Sukkot Zimra. These were tunes of praise of Hashem. And I said, they were nice tunes. So I sang the tunes along with him. And I frequently danced with him the different parts of the tefillah. And for him, now listen, let's just call a spade a spade. It wasn't that his kavanah was so lofty that he was expressing this joy. But you know what? It was so nice. He was connecting with me. He was connecting with me about tefillah. He was connecting with me about tefillah in a way that he could relate to. He was connecting with me about tefillah in a feeling of joy, with a feeling of joy. So much wrapped up in that. Such a nice opportunity. On the other side, if we reflect on the power of joy, the power of anger and losing one's temper, and as I mentioned at the beginning, I'm not perfect in this regard, it is at least equally potent. And we have to realize, we have to just take a step back. Again, we're not going to be perfect. It's not going to happen. But just to reflect on it, a lot of the perspectives that people who went through the day school system who are not into religion, a lot of their perspective towards religion is rooted in God is an angry God. God is going to do this if you don't keep the rules. God is going to do this. It's all about punishments. We're so scared of God. Da, 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 da. So just realize and remember that much of our children's perspective towards religion, I firmly believe, is connected to the perspective towards us and their perspective of our perspective towards religion. If we demonstrate anger towards our children regularly, I really think it takes away from things. I think it could take away from things in a very significant way. I don't mean we shouldn't have rules. We absolutely have to have rules. We absolutely have to be firm. By the way, there's a world of difference between a firm statement of this is this is time to go to bed, or it's time to do your homework, or get off that table, or whatever exactly it's going to be, and when we lose our temper. And believe me, I'm sure we all realize our kids totally know when it's one and when it's the other. One is we're in control of the situation, one is we lost control of the situation. And I just, forgive me if I'm belaboring the point, but I just think in this setting, it's very worthwhile to note. I would say pretty emphatically that in our day and age, physical contact as a means of discipline is really not an option. It's really not an option. And I think it's incumbent upon us, if it happens in our homes, if it's coming from us, to not do it. And if it's coming from a spouse, be very active in seeing that it's not done. I think it's really, to me, it's a very strong truth. Okay, so point number one, again, is kind of allowing our children to sprout and thinking of the long game. Point number two is appreciating how much we model for our children, and particularly when it comes to what we value and hopefully a spirit of happiness in the home, and trying to steer clear of anger in the home. I know I'm speaking a lot. I want to make one more point, and then I'm happy to open up for some comments if anyone has. Finally, and I just added it based on our discussions this morning, but there's a famous pasuk in Mishlei. Sheva yipol tzadik v'kam. Sheva yipol tzadik v'kam. A righteous person falls seven times and gets up. So what does that mean? So it's normally understood as, you can't keep a good person down, you know? Person's a great person, they fall, they keep on getting up. Rav Yitzchak Huttner has a very famous idea. Rav Yitzchak Huttner says, you know what makes a person great in this world? What makes a person a tzaddik, what makes a person righteous, is having the experience of falling and then getting up. If we never fall, we'll never become great. Part of how we grow as people is failing and rising from the failure. We need to let our children fall every now and then. We need to allow our children to fall. It's a very common tendency to protect our children, from all problems. We're really not helping them develop life-solving tools, problem-solving tools. So just to give, in my mind, one of the most classic scenarios of this is there's some problem at school. And you know what? Let's just assume, for the sake of the example, that the teacher really is wrong or the principal really is wrong. Happens. Generally not. But our natural reaction is we're going to come in guns blazing, and we're going to completely take care of our child. And the child isn't even going to know they had a negative experience. We have to be advocates for our children. And there are many, many times when we need to rise to the occasion. And even if it's outside of our comfort zone, we need to get in there. We need to tell the teacher or the principal, whatever it is, hopefully in an appropriate way, but this is what has to be. And you don't understand my child like I understand my child. We need to do that too. But sometimes it's not the end of the world. And sometimes if our child has a not-so-pleasant experience with a teacher, the greatest way we can help our child is sympathizing with them and strategizing with them of how to deal with the situation. That's teaching our child problem-solving techniques and helping our child, by the way, develop his or her own muscles to create problem-solving techniques. It's very interesting. I was once giving a talk more like on the schools, and I asked one of the educators in our community, one of the very fine, very intelligent educators in our community, if there was one thing you wanted to tell parents, what would it be? You know, like I told them what the topic was. And the person said to me, they had so many times people, many, many times, obviously not all the time, many times people pull their kids from schools over such an event. You know, there was a teacher, and he said, and basically they're teaching their children to run away from problems. That's what they're teaching their children. It's an interesting, again, every situation is different, and there are definitely times where it makes sense to pull from the school. But this idea that we're teaching our children resiliency, again, and I don't mean necessarily we just leave them to figure it out and we wish them well. Maybe sometimes that's appropriate, but I mean, let's sit with them and let's be sympathetic. Let's tell them we believe them, etc. But how can we make this work? I have more to say, but I don't know if anyone has any comments or questions. If not, that's fine too. I'll keep on talking, but David.
So I just wanted to get your thoughts on, you said we're supposed to be kind of setting them up for future success. We're supposed to be focusing on the things that matter long term.
Yeah.
How do you balance that with kind of the developmental stage that a kid's at? So they're you know, I can't teach either of my kids what kavana during tefillah is.
Right.
Because they don't get that.
Right.
So there are a lot of things where the thing that they need to, that they should be getting out of this is something that's just, I don't know what I can do with them.
Right, so I would say, again, we're all different. I would say that if we don't have any tangible things we can bring to the children at this point, it might not be the most worthwhile exercise at this juncture. In other words, if we sit there and we for example, let's talk about brachos, for example. I'll tell you, we're big on this at home for the younger ages. My wife, from a very young age, basically the kind of age you would tell a child, you know, we should say thank you when someone didn't have the kids say brachos, and had the kids say thank you to Hashem for the water. Say thank you to Hashem for the piece of cake. And that, I thought that was very wise. That was a way of sort of conveying to a child, as opposed to bracha being some, you know. And so then they're in the habit of saying thank you to Hashem. And at one point, there was a segue. Okay, now, this is the way we thank Hashem. But that was something they could relate to. I mean, so it's definitely a balancing act. Every situation is different. And I don't know. I guess it's a general thing. But I think if we feel like there's... sometimes we find our children with us because whatever, our children are with us, you know. But so then the goal is different. Then the goal is not necessarily a great chinuch moment. The goal is how to make it out of this with as stress-free a way as possible. That's a different... And obviously without messing up our children. That's like, you know, you have to ask yourself, what's the great educational moment of hustling down the aisle at Shalom's 5 minutes before it closes on a Friday with my child? Well, I'm not sure what the great chinuch moment is, but the bottom line is I need to go to Shalom's and my child's with me, so my child's coming. And hopefully we won't mess up, you know. But you know what I mean? You know, I think so. Ruben, was that a hand?
No.
Okay. Yeah.
Just when you were saying that, you know, we don't do physical... when we're trying to discipline a child, we don't do anything physical with them. And you were saying that today that stands. So what changed? Like why? I mean, right? Because we believe in Jewishly that, you know, that the avos, you know,
right,
were on a higher level than we are. So why are things? Why does parenting sort of evolve?
Right. So I was thinking about that. It's very interesting. I mean, there are definitely sources in the Gemara that talk about, you know, striking a child if a child acts inappropriately. So I have two angles for that. And the first thing I think is the real point. I think so. First of all, totally from a Musar perspective, like completely from a Musar perspective, I want to share a story with you. There's someone I know who I think is a tremendous parent. This person's old enough to be my parent, not my parent, but old enough to be a parent, and they had a child in the teenage years who did something extremely inappropriate, like really, really bad, and they called their child upstairs. It's going to sound strange. They gave the child a patch, and to the best of my knowledge, that's the only time they ever did that to that child. So it's like a 15-year-old or something, and they gave the child. So it sounds a little weird, honestly. Mm-hmm. The point was that, and by the way, the parent did it with complete calm. The point was that this was something, this was the best way they could think of to convey how way beyond the line this was. And by the way, I spoke to the child once about it, or I spoke to someone who had spoken to the child about it, and it resonated with them in a very powerful way. I think the vast majority of people in our society who would strike over discipline would have a great challenge keeping that calm. So that's like, so what I definitely think, and I think you could argue that the pshat in all those Gemaras was not that a person was so angry they did X. You know what I mean? I think that's one point. The other point is it's so unaccepted in society that honestly, if a child, even if theoretically it was right, a child hears it from so many things that it's so such a wrong way to parent, I think it's counterproductive, honestly.
They'll have a disrespect for
them. Yeah, yeah. So, I don't know. My main thing is the first thing. Let's put it this way. Most of the time, you hear about such a thing happening in our times, the sense is not that the person's doing it with complete calm and the sense of the person lost themselves. And that's very scary. And by the way, that's horrid chinuch. I mean, just forget whether it's because it's teaching the child that there's such a thing as totally losing it. You know what I mean? I don't know if my answer is correct or not, but I think it's, yeah, thank you. Maybe last thing in a little bit, please.
So, continuing on the line of punishment or have had to respond when something has gone wrong, I've heard both sides of whether a timeout is a good situation or not. What are your thoughts on?
You know, I have to be very honest. I'm not sure I have the credentials to answer. I mean, we definitely do timeouts in my home. We do timeouts as a consequence and not a punishment. We're very big on that. In other words, you're not conducting yourself in a manner that you can be around the other kids right now. We're very sorry. Again, we try to, my wife says it very calmly, and I occasionally say it calmly. You know, you're going to have to go upstairs, but not because you're a bad child and da 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 da. And it's not just a punishment; it's a consequence. And we try very hard to create consequences, which, by the way, is just look at it from a Torah perspective for a moment. Is I think also a very powerful chinuch, because why should I not? I mean, first of all, I shouldn't do bad things because God wants me to do the right things. But by the way, even that. I shouldn't do bad things because there are consequences to doing bad things. And I shouldn't treat people disrespectfully because besides HaKadosh Baruch Hu, there are consequences in my relationships with people. So that's, for us as adults, the greatest deterrent has to do with consequence, honestly, I think. You know, so we go in that mode. I think so. We try to focus on consequence versus punishment. Like I said, beyond that, I think there are people here who could probably answer the question far better than I could. I just want to make a few more points. I do want to be done by 9. A lot of these things are really elementary, but I think it's good to just talk about it a little bit. Our children have to feel that they're worth our time. Our children really have to feel that they're worth our time. It's really important. We have to, looking at it from the perspective of someone who's normally out, because someone who's normally outside of the home, I personally try very, very hard that when I'm home with my family, I'm home and I'm not on the phone. There are sometimes pressing things what can I do? But other than that, I'm home. I tell people all the time, people try to get a hold of me, the worst number to use for me is my home number. Because I tell them either I'm not home, or and if I'm home, I'm almost certainly not picking up the phone. Because that's when I'm home. The time that we spend in our cars driving our kids around is that has golden potential for regular communication. And by the way, for all my talk about golden potential for regular communication, there's a ton of times where I try to strike up a conversation with my kids when they're in the car and they have no interest in talking to me. And okay, whatever it is. But you know what? So I say to myself, So if we'll drive quietly, we'll drive quietly. I am not turning on WTOP or my CD or whatever it is because they're not talking to me. Now, if they ask me to turn on music, that's something else. That's for them. But it is not on my end. And I'm really trying to be particular about it. I just think we are so busy, we really have to try to convey this to our children, not through words, through deeds. I think it's really important. We have tremendous roles as parents. We have extremely important partners in the schools to which we send our children. Our children need to hear from us respect for the schools and respect for the teachers. They need to. They absolutely need to. I think it's really important. And they need to hear sympathy from us also, by the way. If they came home and something happened that wasn't fair, they need to know that they can talk to us. But there's a difference between, wow, you know, maybe you should talk to the teacher about it, or did you talk to the teacher about it, or maybe in extreme situations, maybe I'll call the teacher. This isn't that, and oh, what did that jerk do? And forgive the exaggerated example, but it's not that much of an exaggeration sometimes. There's a big difference. It's a big difference. And I really think, even though I know it's a tremendous challenge, I think we have to really make a very concerted effort to not have our children hear us talk about how challenging it is to pay tuition. And let me just say as a disclaimer, believe you me, it's a major financial challenge in the Rosenbaum home also. Okay? I try very, very hard. Believe me, when the door is closed, I'm talking to my wife. I do share my feelings with her sometimes. Again, this is such a significant part of the children's day. Hopefully, they're having wonderful experiences. And the bottom line is, for us to be constantly negative, all they know is that the parents are negative about the school that they're going to, for some reason or another. And if we do feel the need to talk about tuition, I try every now and then, I try to say something to my children like, you know, we work very hard to provide you to be able to go to the wonderful school that you go to, and it's worth all the effort. Even if it comes up, there's a way to, I think so. Okay, one more thing I want to say in this vein, and that is, it fits into what we talked about at the beginning. We don't have all the answers. We're not supposed to have all the answers. We can't allow ourselves to be insecure when schools or other experts advise us to contact professionals, outside help, therapists, OTs, etc. We can't allow ourselves to be insecure. Nobody said, I'm not a therapist. I don't know what to do. So I firmly believe, before even the therapist, if they call from school that they have a problem, we need to view the schools as our partners, and we need to really think about this. We got a very nice compliment one day, and honestly, for us, this is one of the nicest compliments we could have as parents. One of my little angels did something slightly less than angelic, and the teacher called my wife and spoke to my wife about it, and they shared what happened, and my wife is angelic, and my wife was very appropriate and thanked them and discussed strategies, whatever it was. And the teacher said something, and the teacher was somewhat apologetic for calling us because it wasn't a great offense. It was kind of like borderline. And the teacher said that they discussed with another staff member whether or not they should call us. And the other staff member said, you know, if you call the Rosenbaums, it'll be a worthwhile call. In our book, that was one of the nicest compliments we could receive. But just to think about it, the amount of tension between schools and parents. And listen, and sometimes schools can be wrong. Of course schools can be wrong. But if they're wrong, if it's an argument, you're not going to do such a good job conveying that wrong point to them. Anyway, if they feel that you're a partner and you say, well, there's an aspect of my child that maybe you're not aware of. Let me tell you about the history. Maybe you don't know what happened 2 years ago. It's a whole different dynamic. And I also emphasize, when it's recommended that we go to different kind of specialists. It is a golden opportunity to enhance our children's experience. And we need to see it as such. These different specialists, there are numerous reasons to go to a therapist today. Children have various social, emotional needs. It doesn't mean there's something wrong with them. And more importantly, it doesn't mean there's something wrong with you if you need to send your child to a therapist. We need to stop thinking that way. It's very important. We would send our child to a doctor if there was a need that they had. We need to be ready to send the child to a therapist. It's very important. It's late. I want to address one point much more briefly than it should be addressed. And I apologize ahead of time because it's a very uncomfortable topic. We need to be aware of keeping our children safe from other people. First of all, let me just mention there's a book. I actually spoke to a therapist from another community who's actively involved with this topic. This is their main professional focus. I asked them about this book. They highly recommended it. It's called Let's Stay Safe. It's put out by ArtScroll. And actually, I told the therapist the age group that this presentation was for, and the therapist said that they feel that it is reasonable to share this with a child, even from nursery school. Let's Stay Safe, but they said even the older, and there's still what the child can get from it. The therapist did emphasize to me that it's always good with this type of book for the parent to read it first, internalize what they should show to the child, what they shouldn't show the child, knowing their child as opposed to just plopping down and let's start going through this book. Okay, I want to go through a few points very quickly. First of all, just to state the obvious, there are definitely situations of pedophilia within the Orthodox Jewish community. I am not aware of any problems within our community at the moment, but we have to recognize it as a possibility. We have to protect our children, just like we would do a million other things to protect our children. It is extremely valuable for our children to hear very clearly in numerous settings, in numerous ways, that if they have a concern, they can share it with their parents, and their parents will listen to them, and their parents will believe them. There's a great value in that. Again, and I don't mean necessarily in, if anyone touches you, da-da-da, tell me, and I'll listen to you, and I'll believe you. But in everything, if the example the therapist gave me the other day, if Aunt Bela pinches their cheek too hard and it makes them uncomfortable, they need to know that they can tell us, and we'll do something about it. That's a very valuable thing. Again, people can figure out how exactly to say it. This therapist, I thought this was a very good rule of thumb. And the big thing is, the more calm we are when we relay this, the more healthy, the more it comes in a healthy way for the child. Any place where a bathing suit covers, no one has a right to touch you. It's a very concrete thing. If anybody ever touches you in a place where it's covered by a bathing suit, you should tell us about it. It's really important to not allow our children to be alone with adults, to be alone with an adult for an extended period of time. Again, and I'm sorry, I hope I'm not freaking anybody out, but this is for everything. This is for tutors. This is for all kinds of stuff. It should be. It makes a ton of sense if we have someone who's tutoring our child in math, let them tutor the child at school, let them tutor the child in our house, but to tutor the child in some building where it's just them and the child, Rahman al-Atslan, okay, this is, my mind is still, I heard this a while ago, I was involved with a webinar for this topic. We shouldn't allow our children to wander around too much, even in from places. I repeat, I don't have anything that I know to be concerned of in this building. But having said that, I don't know of anyone in this building who I would be concerned about. This is a big building. It's a big building. We should know where our kids are. Shabbos morning, we should know where our kids are. Just to give you a sense, I try very hard to not have random rooms unlocked. Again, I know this sounds crazy, but there are. It's very important to be cognizant of our child dropping a clue about something strange that happened. One of my kids once came home from a trip and told me that whenever he went on a certain like activity, he got this funny feeling. So that really concerned me. I don't know what that meant, you know. And by the way, I also didn't want to flip out, you know. So I just calmly asked him, I asked him a few things. I asked him who he would participate in the activity with. You know what I mean? Like that kind of thing. I asked my wife to schmooze a little bit about what the neat things that happened that day were and stuff like that. And you know, and thank God, it really seemed to be that just when that kid did that activity, he got a little nauseous or something like that. But we really did feel the need to inquire. And thank God, many, many, many times, probably the vast majority of times when we inquire about things, it'll turn out to be nothing. But Rahman al-Islam, it's not always nothing. Okay, this is just something I'm very big on. Honestly, even when I come to the nursery school, I try to float this one. When people talk about Lashon Hara, you have to realize from a firm perspective, a person who is doing something inappropriate to children loves to pull out the Lashon Hara card. There are so many reports and accounts like this. Don't tell anybody, because if you tell anybody, A, they're not going to believe you. That's one of the classic things that said, which is why it's so important that our children believe that we will believe them. And it's Lashon Hara. So I always, whenever, when I'm talking to my kids at home, when I'm talking in the nursery school, I always say, whenever I'm talking about Lashon Hara, I say, but if someone is hurting you or making you uncomfortable in any way, it's always okay to tell your parent or a teacher or something like that. I just throw that in. Again, not as this great, you know, great, terrible catastrophe. Just kind of, you know, the back of their minds. I think it's very important. I think it's really a remarkable avoda, remarkable task that HaKadosh Baruch Hu gives us when we talk about raising children. It's really an opportunity to shape a neshama and Klal Yisrael. It's an amazing, amazing thing. I think the more we think about our greatest goals, I think it's fair to say that our greatest goals are that we should recognize the strengths of our children, we should recognize the weaknesses of our children, we should do everything we can to accentuate one and help them work with the other. And as from people, we should do everything we can to help them find a connection to HaKadosh Baruch Hu and Yiddishkeit in a way meaningful for them. And if we do that, we've achieved one of the greatest things a person can do in this world. You know, it's funny, I have a certain amount of gut check in my personal life. I'm very, very honored to hold a, you know, relatively important communal position. I tell myself all the time, if the day comes where someone else will be the rabbi of Young Israel Shomrei Emuna, the shul will be fine. Everybody will be fine. If Chas V'Shalom, I wasn't the husband I need to be, and maybe even more importantly, the father I need to be, that's the thing that would dramatically change people's lives. And I just think it's such an important thing. We get so caught up in so many different things. We need to be the parents that we need to be, that we can be. And we're busy lives, and we have busy lives, and we have to do all these things. But what calling do we have in life that's more important than this? I just think it's, and one thing I didn't mention, we really need to daven to HaKadosh Baruch Hu to help us succeed, to give us the wisdom to help us succeed, to help us connect our children to the right people to help them, whether it be teachers, whether it be friends, whether it be other professionals. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu, thank you all for coming. HaKadosh Baruch Hu should help each and every one of us help our children reach the greatest of heights. I don't want to hold people. If anybody would like to discuss anything, I'm more than happy to stick around, but people should feel free to head out. So people should feel free to go. Judy.
So I was just going to say, a few years ago, there was a psychologist in New York. I don't remember the name of the school, the Torah school, about the last...
Dr. David Pelkovitz, I think.
Exactly. And yeah. He also recommended another book I just thought I would share.
Yes.
It's called Talking to Your Children About Intimacy, A Guide for Orthodox Jewish Parents. And it has a Hascomo Bono chapter from YU and a few others.
Thank you very much. Do you have any idea what the age focus is for this?
It says it's
older.
Yeah.
Okay, but it's good to know.
It's good to know. I mean, some of us have nips, so.
Thank you very much.
I was going to ask that age question. You know, like at what age do you talk to a child about worrying about other people bothering them?
I think, and again, this therapist that I spoke to was definitely of the, I think if we couch it in a comfortable enough and calm enough way, I think even from nursery school, it's not crazy to do it. I think I'm now sitting you down to talk about all the evil people out there, you know, but just as an aside, by the way, I actually think Lashon Hara is a tremendous way to, you could kind of throw in things sort of like, you could kind of say, you know, if you do this, you know, you should never say anything bad about someone, but you know, if someone's doing something inappropriate to you, you know, like something that made you uncomfortable in some way, that's something you can always, I don't know,
if you're noticing that the child is saying something that there's a question about, then you can kind of go into that topic of.
I'll tell you something. I personally, again, I don't mean to be too alarmist. I think it's worthwhile. I don't mean, this is not like my children say Moda'ani and then I sit them down every morning and say, well, let's talk about what we should, you know, but I think every now and then, just as an aside, do your children know not to talk to strangers? We talked to our children about not talking to strangers. I suppose from a young age, we talked to our children about not talking. I don't know. Everyone's different. You know what I mean? But I don't know. We just find sort of like a way to just kind of stick it in. Our kids get they're not supposed to talk to strangers. Our kids should get that if somebody makes them uncomfortable, they should always feel comfortable talking. And the other point that I was raising before is that it's so interesting. If our kids tell us something, have nothing to do with any of this kind of stuff. Our kids tell us there was again, that example I thought was such a cute example. There's some aunt that pinches their cheek too tight. If they see that we actually listened to them and we went and very nicely said something to the aunt, then we're planting seeds. You know what I mean? We're planting
that the parent is a good person to go to if they right. need something.
Right, but I think the scary thing is, Rahman al-Islam, if someone is touched in an inappropriate place, I think there have to be some planting of seeds to understand that that's something worthy of telling someone about. And I don't think we should wait. I don't think we should wait. I don't mean to put anybody on the spot, but if anyone has said any...
Strangers, but but everyone's a stranger to them outside of a house. Like, you want them to be relaxed and comfortable with people and feel safe in general.
Yeah, I think that's
something that is happening are much less than right. them, you know, if you talk to them about it, they'll have a fear and then
I think it gets back to the way we say it. I think, every now and then, by the way, and it doesn't mean that the person is an evil villain. Every now and then it could be, you know, if somebody touches you in a place that your bathing suit covers, that's not okay. You should just know if that ever happens, you could tell your father or mother, you can tell a teacher, you know. I don't know, I think so. I think the key is if we relay it, if we couch it in other settings and we relay it with calm. Dr. Raven, please. I would love to hear
Yes. Yeah. A really good book. It's a Jewish book called Let's Stay Safe.
I did it. Yeah. I feel so validated. Thank you. No, thank you very much. And I think, you know, you'll correct me if I'm wrong, I think one of the nicer things about that book is it's a kid's book.
And it covers all of it.
Right, all kinds of stuff.
Don't talk to strangers, everything.
Right.
911, whatever it is, it covers it. And this is one thing it covers
right. in it. Right, so you don't even have to find the it could be a new book that you get. But again, the advice I was given was you should just make sure to look at it beforehand before you.
At a very young age, too, I think it's really important just to go to the positive and stress,
four safe people to be with. Who's a safe person under any circumstance that you could tell?
So you know what's scary? You know what's scary? A lot of the times, a lot of the stories are I forgot even the details of it. I know at the Torah school, they have someone come in, I think once a year normally, to make a presentation about this topic in some way. And they do I forgot the technical terms, but they do some kind of chart with them, different circles of different people. So different people that I could feel comfortable talking to. But part of the chachma of it is, and I forgot, they did it in a smart way, but basically it sort of opens up the possibility that it could even be one of the people is someone you need to protect yourself from. But it sort of does it in a very calm way. In our day and age, I don't think there's anybody who you can just say, it's terrible to even think about, but it's many, many accounts involve a family member. That's the bottom line.
Specific people, like, I would tell, like, with Shmuel, he's like an 8-year-old, emotionally. And he says, is this a safe person? And I say,
so let me clarify.
Any circumstance, yes.
I think I misspoke. I think there's two categories. I think one issue is who's a safe person that you can spend time with. But there's something else. There are certain things, if anybody does that to you, it's not okay. And so I think you're actually setting up, I think you're helping the child if you don't say, such and such is someone, no matter what happens, you can trust them. Because by the way, when you're telling the child, if Chas V'Shalom anything ever happens with that person, you're not going to believe them. That's also what you're implicitly telling the child. Sorry, again, I don't mean to be so alarmist, but this is a big danger out there. So I think there are safe people, and of course there are two categories of people. There's people, but I think it makes sense for a child to know there are certain types of touches and things that it's not okay for anybody.
Except
the doctor.
When your parents are there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Again, anyone who wants to go should feel free to go, but please.
Yes. Well, part of it is that, if you want to address this issue, you start by coming at it from the positive side of it and saying, what does it mean to be safe? And then throwing it in, well, if you're uncomfortable, is that being safe? And then,
it could be, but you probably have
so
to.
So that they're not scared of.
Right. The scary thing is that for this specific type of thing that the child probably hasn't even fathomed anyone ever doing to them, I don't know how much of a sense they have of what's comfortable, what's uncomfortable, unless you sort of tell them there are certain types of things that are just not okay. Is that, I don't know, maybe, I don't know. Alana? Thank you.
No problem. I'll break the ice. In today's day and age, we have electronics. I sit in meetings where people have three types of electronics. Raising children today in a positive way, where they have access to anything. What is your suggestion?
Get back to me in a while, but and I'll tell you what didn't work. You know what I mean? I don't know if I'll tell you what worked, but. I think we have to set limits. I think we have to set limits in terms of amount of usage. And I think we have to set limits in terms of what they can be looking at. I don't know. I have my gut tells me, I mean, obviously everything has to be age appropriate, but my gut tells me that if we utterly, totally shut out from everything under the sun, we're probably shooting ourselves in the foot. That's what my gut tells me. Having said that, I think appropriate limits, and that's part of our job as parents, and and to figure out what's. But I also think, besides even the religious stuff, it's just so it's so poor for the development of the child to be so glued to this and that, and But I think the point is that, and I think, by the way, the more limits we have, I think we're teaching our children the value of limits. I think that's also, more than that, I wish I had some solid rules of thumb. You know what I mean? I don't think we should have our kids with 85 different types of media. I don't think so. I think we have to have the courage and confidence to not be criticizing other people, but to set our own standards in our own home. The fact that so-and-so has doesn't matter. That's great. That's not what we do in our house. And I'm sure there are things that we do in our house that so-and-so doesn't do. Every house is different. I don't think we can allow ourselves to be bullied in that way. But having said that, I think like if we utterly, totally shut out of everything, I think for most of us, that would be pretty challenging. You have any?
Can I give one more?
Yes.
I Rules is the name of a book that actually covers some of this in an interesting way, I think, and talks about how every family is going to need to figure out for themselves what works. But it covers a lot of different areas of screen time and all of that.
That's great. Thank you very much. And I think it's extremely important that whatever those rules are, whatever we do as a family, we have to be consistent. We have to be firm, because if we're not, then everything is a battle. You know what I mean? I mean, I think that's...
Negotiation.
Yeah. Yes?
The issue of not talking about tuition and things like that around students or around children, I think you need to break it all down to that everything we work hard to earn for the family. So it's not just school, it's food, it's... and one example, I think this might be a little... far, but one family, the father would come home with the paycheck and present it to the mother as like, look how hard I worked. Here is my contribution for the month. Now, how are we gonna use it together as a family? And but just getting the children to understand that everything that we do in the family, we work hard for. So having tuition as one of the things. In some ways, I think it is important for students to know that it's one of the things that we work hard for. But having it as one of the things opposed to the only thing.
Right. I think it's a very wise and valuable point. I think so. I guess I was sort of going on something else. I mean, the bottom line is there are a number of Shabbos tables on a given week that the topic of tuition is front and center. And not in a chinuch context like what you're talking about, but just griping. And that, I think, is not so beneficial. Yeah, but I think what you said is very powerful. Thank you very much. Okay, thank you so much. Thank you for coming. Thank you very much. So I don't know how to turn these off. It's not only to feel a class, I don't know how to turn off.
Yeah.
Thank you so much, Judy.
Sure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. Thank you for coming.
Oh, you did turn it on.
Oh,
I saw you text on the way here.
Ah.
So
Big difference, little difference, all the difference, love change.
You just need to try hard.
and then you're just expressing like, when you're ready,
so yeah, you send your kid to the doctor when they have
a fever, so
that's the horrible stuff that last night.
Yeah, that's what I wanted to say to you guys. It's like, today is feeling ready. It's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
It's going to happen.
Yeah, people don't.
He'll be ready, and his body will be ready, and that's when it will happen. In the meantime, diapers. But I still think that you should make the boundary between the underwear plus and the diaper. You know, like, he's soiling and he's wetting and all that. He needs to be diapering. Because that's part of his. He's got this big choice to make, and it's going to be very hard to make.
My dad deals with situations that aren't really
join the world of the big people, and he needs to see that in stars.
But something he said is,
and it's hard to know. I think that when we got
that
old,
if you do something to them, that they're not comfortable, they can tell they're wrong.
We left around 6:30, and that hour
and that's enough. And if I tickle my kid too much, or he doesn't like it, and he wants to tell my wife, my wife says, baby, you shouldn't be tickling them so much. Great, because that's exactly the kind of thing that opens him up to the idea that, like there's nothing that he can do.
But thank you.
But I think the pinching the cheeks and, you know, and right. being tickled and not like, those are the things that you tell them that get them into the mood that, yeah, of course you can. Of course you can tell your parents when you didn't like something and you don't know how to deal with it.
Right.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. There was this time that,
thank you.
Thank
you. Thank
you so much, Rabbi. Yeah.
Thank you very much. Thank you.
I might have told this in the past that one time we were going with my parents in Manassas, and this is when we lived downtown. It was a long ride, and my mother was like freaking out that Jeremy should go before we left. And he said, "But I don't have to go." And she said, "But go anyway." And he said, "But when we get to Max's, there are bathrooms there." And she said, "It's like cleaner and nicer to go at home." And I was like, "No, do not put this stuff in his head. You messed me up enough. Do not do this to him." Yeah, right.
And it's hard enough for kids, like when they go to a place that they're not used to.
Right.
Can you use the toilet there?
Right.
And by the way, my kids are freaked out about the fact.
It doesn't go all the way around.
Right. Kids are freaked out about the fact that. Toilets flush by themselves, and he like freaks out.
Oh,
he doesn't
terrible.
Want to.
Yeah.
And
I
every time
you,
so you have to cover it so that it's not going to make the noise or whatever.
Right.
And
it's hard. It's like,
and it
like
doesn't.
This.
And
yeah.
it doesn't. So Yosef now, who doesn't care about the noise, walks into bathrooms like this. And like,
I mean, he's learning to care about the noise because, like, when we were walking down to the laundry the other day, and Yaku said, we have to go back past. He said, I don't want to walk that way because we are going to have to walk past the fire alarm door. And I said, it's just a door. It's nothing's going to happen. He's like, no, I'm worried today. And it was Friday. He says, you have to leave in the apartment without, or you can come down with the laundry with me. So he decided to come down. At which point, Yosef said, I'm scared. I want to leave without. I said, Yosef, it's just a door. You want me to show it to you? He says, sure. So he's coming. There's no sound, Yosef. But actually, like, once we walk past the door, you see, it's just a door. He's like, yeah, it's just a door.
But
I'm glad that we caught it early enough that
right.
to like have the fear
a hang up, right,
really
right, right.
Easy
yeah.
to
yeah.
hang
then
up.
He was gonna go into the apartment and like be scared of the staircase.
Yeah.
Definitely.
Because he heard from his brother that there was something scary.
Right.
He doesn't
like,
even
right.
know what it is.
Yeah.
And then he's walking down the hallway, like after we're already down on the G floor for the laundry room,
yeah.
he's like, walking like this. I'm like, yes, is there any noise? Oh no.
Like that.
Right. Yeah. I can't believe I didn't tell that story in our class about the Max's. Yeah. No, please. Not to another generation. No.
My dad says, and he said this a bunch of times. It's not a question about whether or not, especially what your kids talk to their therapist.
Right.
To see what ways are
right, exactly.
Going to
right,
my dad
right.
says, like, yeah, like, okay, so your kids are going to need therapy, great, but like,
right,
you know,
right, right.
Maybe it'll be something pretty inconsequential. Maybe
right.
it'll be something that, like, you know, you don't have to be embarrassed about the fact that you messed it up.
Right. It'll be something. Exactly. Wait, I have to get my husband to call Simi.